If he did,
go ahead.
Normally, under usual circumstances, you're prohibited from taking your haircut on Cholam Moed.
Yeah.
I'm going to learn why later on in the Gemara. But these people are permitted to take a haircut on Cholam Moed. Somebody who comes from abroad, so he was traveling. Since he was traveling, was unable to take a haircut before Yom Tov. So he arrived Cholam Moed, only Beis Hashivya, or somebody was in captivity and he was released from captivity on Cholam Moed. So clearly while he was in captivity, he couldn't take a haircut. Similarly, somebody who was released from prison, while he was in prison, he couldn't take a haircut. So he can take a haircut on Cholam Moed, on Menudah, Shekir Lechachamim, somebody who was in excommunication during the period preceding Yom Tov, and on Cholam Moed, they released him from his excommunication. So at that point, he can now take a haircut. At this period, during the period while he was excommunicated, part of the prohibition that applies to someone who is excommunicated is that he may not take a haircut. Now he can take a haircut. Suppose somebody took an oath not to take a haircut, and now he went to the Chacham, and the Chacham was Matir Neder, so now he was first able to release his vow on Cholam Moed. Because it was first released on Cholam Moed, he can take a haircut because he couldn't take a haircut prior to him, too young then. But Hanazir, the same thing about a Nazir. Somebody says, Harini Nazir, somebody says, I will be a Nazir. And he takes upon himself a period of Nathiris, Sam Nathiris Shlishim Yain. For example, the ordinary period of Nathiris is up to 30 days, and the 30-day period concludes during Cholam Moed. So now he can cut his hair for the first time on Cholam Moed. So we say that on that occasion, he may, in fact, take a haircut and does not need to wait until after Yom Tov is over. But how to play the Mitzvah, the same thing, is a Nathiris, somebody who had what we call leprosy, but it's not really leprosy, but it's the disease of Tzaraas, and he was cured of his Tzaraas, so part of the purification process is that they have to shave his hair. And so when the shave is here, that would be a haircut on Cholam Moed. And we say that because he was first able to come to do this purification process on Cholam Moed, and so he couldn't do it before Yom Tov. So again, he's committed to engage in this process on Cholam Moed, to engage in this purification. And these are those that can wash their clothes. They can launder their clothes on Cholam Moed. Somebody who comes from abroad, from Beit HaShivya, or from captivity, maybe from Beit HaSurim, somebody who was in prison, a menudo, or somebody who was excommunicated, Shifir Chachamim, that the Chachamim were matir his nizui, they released him from his excommunication, or somebody who swore that, or took an oath that he would not launder his clothes, and now they released him from his vow, he can launder his clothes on Cholam Moed. Now, you're going to learn about another type of
That's
a good question. I don't know the answer. I know your question is why don't they put them both together?
Yes. Yes, they're the same thing.
Vahotar, mitzvahesa yadayim, mitzvahesa svarim, and mitzvahesa svarim. So now we have another rule that just basically says that towels covers, etc., things that become soiled during the onset, and usually you don't have enough to last the onset over. So such things can be laundered out of Chol HaMoed. Everybody realizes that people don't have an infinite supply of towels, because they have an infinite supply of tablecloths, etc. So mitzvah chitayet daniyim, so hand towels, chitah shvarim, things that hataparim, those that the covers for folks, mitzvah chitah bath towels, hazovim, hazovim, or so those may be laundered on Chol HaMoed. But everybody knows that you laundered it before Yom Tov, and now you use it on Yom Tov and Chol HaMoed, and now you ran out, and so you're laundering with Tzurich HaMoed, and you weren't mechavim lasas malachim HaMoed. I didn't leave these for the Chol HaMoed, or you didn't just say, you know what, who cares, I'll just leave it, I'll do the laundry on Chol HaMoed. Everybody realizes that you did the laundry before Yom Tov, and now you just need to do it again. Whereas other types of clothing, people don't realize that you ran out. So clothing you're not permitted to launder. We're going to learn about there may be certain occasions where you can launder certain clothing under certain circumstances in a certain manner. But right now, we're just talking about the hefter of washing towels, linens, those types of things that everybody understands that they were laundered before Yom Tov, and now you're just laundering it because you don't have it. So, hazavim hazavis, azav or azava. Azavim and azavis is a type of tumah that comes from the body, the strong type of tumah. So, azavis, today we don't really have azavis. The azavis, we combine it together with nida, and it's all one big tumah that in our days. So we apply the rules of nida and zivus universally, and we don't distinguish between the two. So generally, a woman becomes a nida in today's lingo, in our part. Zavi is where somebody has who has sholish rigiyeh. He has three times he sees a carry in a very short period of time, in 3 days. He becomes a stringent form of Pame. So these people, they can wash their clothes. Anide is Ayyub, it's Kalahim, it's Samaritan, Ayyub, it's Aaron. So these people are all permitted. So a Saba, Anida, a Yeled, the woman who gave birth. So normally a woman who gives birth, so she has a period of time when she's coming, a period of time that she has to make tara. So she may not be either a Zava or a Nida, but she may be bleeding and be considered tara. Anyone who goes from some of the tara, they are permitted to engage in laundry. Everyone else is prohibited from washing their clothes on colony. We talk a little bit my time Asurin. What's the reason why everyone else is also? Why is it that we say that only these people who may take a haircut, only these people may wash their clothes? Is it not? So the reason is, as we learn elsewhere about another circumstance. We said about Anshei Nishmar of Anshei Maimon. The people who are in the Nishmar and the people who are in the Maimon. Again, we said many times about the people who watch the Beit HaMikdash, the people who have to stand over the Karbonei. So they would set aside an entire week when they were fast, they would go to show, and so we want them to look presentable. And since they're not going to be working that week, they might be tempted to leave over certain types of work to do on that week that they're not going to be employed. So they may be tempted to say, you know what, we'll leave over all the laundry till the week of the Mishnah, the week of the Miners, and they won't wash their clothes, they won't take a haircut, and we want them to look presentable since they are representing all of Klal Yisrael. So therefore, Asurim HaKapar HaKapim, they are prohibited from taking a haircut and from washing their clothes. In other words, what's the reason? So we're saying here clearly the reason why they're prohibited from doing these activities during the week of Nishmar, the week of Maimed, is because we want them to be presentable already from the beginning of that week. And so if we allow them to wash their clothes or to take care of during that week, they'd be tempted to wait for that week. Because that's the least that they're not working. The same thing with Kol HaMoed. We don't want people to delay and say, you know what, I'm busy today, I'm busy tomorrow, I'm busy next day. You know what, a lot of time with Kol HaMoed, I'll take a haircut on Kol HaMoed. So what's going to happen the first 2 days of Yom Tov and the first day of Kol HaMoed? You spend the time in Yom Tov with long hair. You're going to say, why should I take a bath? It's not Yom Tov. Or why should I wash my clothes? I'll do it all later. We want the person to be presentable. The Chamishi, what we said about Anshei Nishmar and Anshei Maimed is that Thursday of that week, Mutarim, they can take a haircut and they can wash their clothes with their Kavod HaShabbos. Kavod HaShabbos, by that day already, they've already worn their clothes for Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. If they don't allow them, they may go into Shabbos with dirty clothes or with long hair or shave their beards and those that do it, so then they'll look not their most presentable. Amar Rav Barachana, Rav Barachana said, Amar Lezer, in the name of Lezer, my time was to say, Shalei, you come to me, you're part of shame in the vulnerable. Don't come in. Again, now we're saying explicitly what the reason why they are prohibited from doing these things, non-shemitah, that they shouldn't come into the week looking disgusting. Okay, now we can actually come to the neck of the shame maneuver. But the fear also the same reason applies. We don't permit them to engage in these activities like Kol HaMoed, because otherwise they'd be tempted to, in that case, they'd be tempted to wait until Kol HaMoed. Fire of Zera. The Zera asked the question of the lie of Heja and Hadega. What happens if somebody lost an object, this valuable object, before Yom Tov, and so he lost his car keys, and he used to go somewhere on Kol HaMoed, and he has no car keys, and he's running around like a chicken without a head during the entire era of Yom Tov. And finally he finds his car keys, but the car keys, he finds them moments before Yom Tov, and now he realizes, oh my, I didn't wash my clothes, I didn't take a haircut, what am I going to do now? Do we say Kivim the Hamas, that since he didn't wash his clothes or didn't take a haircut was occasioned by an unavoidable delay, so therefore he's permitted to take a haircut and wash his clothes and come away? Oh, you did more, perhaps. Kivim the Mukhika Milsa, since to the casual observer, he's not going to know that this guy lost his keys, and so he's just going to see this guy laundering his clothes or taking a haircut of Kol HaMoed, then he's going to assume that he's just violating the prohibition. So because of Maris Ayin, should we prohibit this activity? So we have the question, should we say, since it was occasioned by an unavoidable delay, and you know it wasn't his fault, he lost his keys, he was busy looking for it, he couldn't think straight, so he should be permitted. On an ordinary occasion, he always washes his clothes. Or you have to, this case, this time, he comes, so we're going to punish him for that. Or we say, no, it's not that we're punishing him, we just want to avoid a marasai.
Can you permit a marasai and privately, or there's no difference?
Generally, the rule is that whatever is prohibited because of marasai is also a chadri chadra. There are certain things here that the Chachamim said that you can do it with Tzimur. Those are things where the Chachamim have a humor that we explicitly have relaxed the rule, like we said. Yesterday, for example, the case of maybe with the delivery of the wood planks, and we said that he can take it in to his home, it's in unobtrusively. Yeah. He can do certain sales for Yom Tov, unobtrusive. It's the act of the unobtrusiveness that shows that you're not doing it as an ordinary thing, but you're cognizant that it's Kol HaMoed. There are other things where we say that just generally, just the universal rule outside of these exceptions is that whatever's prohibited because of Maris Ayin is prohibited, the Chatur Chadar. Now, there are certain things that where it's unobtrusive, there is no Maris Ayin, that the whole Maris Ayin is only where it's Mukham Yulsa. So, for example, I'm not now saying the halacha, I'm going to tell you things where there are a lot of them that say that this is okay. There are those that look at it somewhat askance. Someone who needs to go to the bathroom and there's a rest stop and you head into the door, and to the right is the McDonald's, and to the left is the restroom.
Right.
So most places can say that you can go in there because everyone knows that you're wearing a yarmulke. You're not going into the McDonald's, you're going into the restroom to the left. And so even though generally saying one is not permitted to go into a chaser restaurant because of modern dying, here they know you're not going, they have reason to suspect that you're not going into the the restaurant at all. You're going into the restroom.
They have no reason to suspect that you are.
So Maris Ayin has a relaxation of the rule built into it, where a person who's the casual observer, the only time when we say that something is really Maris Ayin, the true Maris Ayin is where the casual observer will come to an inevitable wrong conclusion. But where the casual observer has in front of him two equal ways of alternatives to understand what's happening, and one of them is heter, one of them is iser, then generally we don't say Maris Ayin applies. But here, the unescapable conclusion to the casual observer is not going to be, oh, you know what, he must have lost his keys Erev Yom Tov. The casual observer is going to look and say, he's taking a haircut because Shlomad was going to take a haircut before Yom Tov, because he just didn't get around to it, not because there was some huge thing that it was an unusual occasion that caused him unavoidably to delay taking a haircut.
The guy comes out of jail where he's allowed to have a haircut. How do you judge, oh, this guy came out of jail, this guy didn't come out of jail?
So that's a good question. And the Mepharshim explain, and we're not holding it yet, but basically, the Mepharshim explain that when somebody comes out of jail, and the other things that we said, those are things that people are talking about. Every person who was in Yidui in this community, you knew he was in Yidui. And if he ever came out in Yidui, everybody would be talking about it. It would be on COL. Guy is in jail. Everyone knows he was in jail. Everyone else comes out of jail. Guy, today, going abroad is not a big deal. People go abroad every day. You know, the original rule, when I was sent to South Africa, they were sending me to South Africa, I'm sure it's about 15 years, the rule was that South Africa had the same, was in the southern hemisphere, but for purposes of the discussion, it was in the southern hemisphere, and so they said it had the same rule that was set up in Yeshiva. In Melbourne, which is in the southern hemisphere, has the same rules apply for. The rules were that if you went to Yeshiva, and sometimes like up there, you can go. You can't come back for 2 years. There was no, you couldn't come, return home for Tishrei, right? If you left for any reason, you couldn't come back. It had to be an uninterrupted period. So you're free to leave, but if you leave, you don't come back. And you don't leave for Tishrei. You don't leave for a chasna, you don't leave for anything, you're there for 2 years straight. Again, you will feel like you must leave for a chasna, you can leave, but you're not coming back. There was a period when the Svarim that were in dispute during the court case were returned, and the Bachurim wrote to Derba asking if perhaps the world has become a little smaller. Maybe the world became so. Now it's not such a big world today anymore. You know, the price of tickets are lower, people are in communication, people travel more freely. Not like the old days when nobody ever traveled. Someone went from Australia to America, so it's like everybody talked about it. They talked about it for months before and months afterwards. Today, people travel, you know, people go on vacation, people tour, it's no big deal. So perhaps the rule has changed. I never told them for that occasion that the rule changed. So we wrote in also, we asked Rabbi Lipsker to ask for us as well, but he didn't. So we ended up staying for 2 years. But the point of all of this is that there was a time, and it wasn't even so long ago, an hour was, when travel wasn't that common, and when people went, if somebody was going to Australia, everyone was talking about it. If someone's traveling abroad, everyone's talking about it. But all these cases were things where everybody knew. Whereas somebody who loses his keys, not so enough. You don't expect to come to the show and say, shit, that's this guy who lost his keys. So like Amar Abayah says, Yomru Kol HaSriki Nasudin. If that case, you're going to say, like, the case of, we should consider this for the case of the Srikin in the Sechus Sachim. In Gemara Sachim, we learned that Masses are supposed to be round. Because when you take out a rolling pin, you ask your brother, she took out her Valgehel, she took out her rolling pin, and she started rolling, what comes out? A round matzah, a round dough, a pizza pie. But it comes, it's not making shapes. So there was these fellows, this Vaisos, he knew how to, he had a bakery, and he could make shapes very quickly. In fact, he said, let me tell you the secret. I roll it out, and then I take a stamp, and I stamp in the shape. And I have this form, stamp it in. It takes no extra time. I want to open a matzah bakery with, you know, you have a Moshe Rabbeinu, a pata, you know, and I'll be a hit. I'll be selling matzah, so I'll outsell all the competition. He wanted to do it again. Come at it's a no. No one. What's going to happen is that this year you're doing it, and next year the Chinese are going to be copying. Everyone's going to be copying. You know how it is. The first year you do it, and everybody else is doing the trademark. So next year everybody's going to be copying. But not everybody has the form. You have the form. They'll be sitting there playing with the matzah, trying to form it into a form that will be a sellable form. But it's going to take some time. It's going to come down, so don't do it. So in other words, what we see from this story, that where it's not muchacham yilsa, even though there's a good explanation to this person says, I have a form, but since the next guy is not going to realize that you had a form and he's going to engage in the same activity the next year, and his master is going to be chametz, we don't allow you to do it. So it's the same thing. This guy, he lost his keys. It's true, he lost his keys, and so he has a good excuse for why he should be able to take a haircut on Chol HaMoed. But he allowed him to take a haircut on Chol HaMoed. The next Chol HaMoed, everybody else is going to be taking the haircut. So Amar Abayi Yemiru Kol HaSrikin. Let's quote from the Gemara of Pesachim that Yemiru Kol HaSrikin Asurim Srikei Baisus Mitzrayim. Then they're going to say, should we say that all the shaped molds of matzah are usher except for the mold matzahs of Baisus? So we said over there that it's awesome. The least I make, and according to you, I'm going to be so the Gemara says, if what you're saying is correct, that we should compare Chol HaMoed to the case of forming the matzah into a form, then what happens about the case where we said that Rabbi Yochanan said that if somebody has only one shirt, he's allowed to launder it on Chol HaMoed, because by the fourth day, his shirt is filthy. Okay, so we have two choices. We can either allow him to wash his shirt and have a clean shirt for Yom Tov, or we cannot allow him to and say, oh, we're not going to relax the prohibition because people are going to see that he has that he's doing laundry on Chol HaMoed. So we said, no, if somebody has one shirt, then we relax the prohibition. But how's everyone to know that he only has one shirt? Everyone else is going to say, you see, he's washing his shirt on Chol HaMoed, so and the Chachamim allowed him, so we're allowed to wash shirts on Chol HaMoed. Look at the Chachamim Chol HaShemoed. Where it says, "Fucking Nami Yoyimro Chol HaSlikin Natsunim Sliki Baisus Mitzrayim." Should we apply the same rule that the molds of Pesach were forbidden to all, even to Baisus? Yeah. So I'm not going to, you know, the rhetorical question. Itzman Allah. I'm a Marvadavashi, so the Mara answers no. In the case of somebody who lost his keys, there's nothing to show that he lost his keys. But in the case of a person who has one shirt, there's a bunch of ways of understanding this, Gemara, and we're going to take the very simple way. So But if somebody has one shirt, every shirt in those days had a belt. So the post number today, the buttons necessarily posted with a belt. So if he had one shirt, it stands to reason he had one belt. Now, even when people had two or three shirts, they sometimes only had one belt. So if they were going to wash their clothes, they were wearing a shirt. So if they're wearing the shirt, they're wearing the belt. So when they're washing their clothes, what are they not washing? The belt. So when the casual observer sees what's being washed is only a shirt without a belt, then he says to himself that he has other shirt. He's wearing his shirt and he's washing shirt. Where, however, the person has only one shirt, so he's washing his shirt
with
the belt. So then they see that there's a belt being washed. Another way of understanding it is that when the person has only one shirt, he's not going to be half naked. He's going to wear his jacket over. They can see that he's wearing his jacket, not over his shirt.
Laundry with his jacket on.
With his jacket on, so he looks a bit odd, and so they realize that he only has one shirt. His belt shows that he is.
Right.
So, as long as they say he wasn't in the belt, so if he's wearing his jacket fired up, then they realize that why is his jacket on and fired up? Because he doesn't want to go with his jacket open, and he's not wearing a shirt. So, he's wearing a machine. Ravashi says, Boyer Ravzera said, ask. If somebody lost an Aveda before Yom Tov Mahu, Kim the woman who Muchach Milsa, or if the woman Kim the Lay Muchach Milsa, Kim Hanach Loi. So the Gemara says, the Gemara is asking now a related question where, what did we say? We said that when somebody loses his keys, nobody knows that he lost his keys. But what happens if he's one of the guys who is a craftsman or an artisan who everybody's using on Erev Yom Tov? So imagine the barber loses his keys Erev Yom Tov. So everyone is sitting in the barber shop on Erev Yom Tov taking haircuts, and they see how he's running around in between each haircut, looking under the table, looking under the bench, asking people, did you see my keys? Then you can look around while I'm giving you a haircut. So they say, you see the guys, you're sitting there, and after they 15 minutes, so you look in the back, so you look up the building, you look. So everybody knows he lost his keys. So now, since everyone knows that he lost his keys, so when he washes his clothes on Kalamayas, or he goes to another barber on Kalamayas, everybody knows he lost his keys because he's the professional that everyone was busy with and saw him the whole Erev Yom Tov. The Gemara said, take it. We don't know, and most Poskim say that from this teiku that for halachic purposes he's prohibited from taking a haircut, and others wonder why we should say that as a practical matter he's prohibited, since at least certainly according to Paisas, Chalmoid is Midrabanan, so the whole thing is Midrabanan, and if it's Midrabanan, generally the rule is that a Suffolk Midrabanan is Lehet. The general rule is, if we don't know the rule, if we can't come to a conclusion about a rule, then it's a fair question of biblical tradition. So the rule is that Suffolk Deiraisa L'chumra. When it comes to a question of Midrabanan, Suffolk Midrabanan. But according to Pesach, it's all together the Rabbanan. It's just an achmach on the problem. So some wonder why the rule should be this way, but most Pesach can nevertheless say that this paper leads to the conclusion that they would, and that they're not a yitzim in a klal. They're not exempt from the rule that people who lose their keys are prohibited from taking a sayam. Somebody comes from abroad. Now, well, so there's a bit, something a bit odd in the Mishnah, just incidentally. The mission is that we're going to say that it's going to be about Rishut and Shalev Rishut. We're going to be talking about whether he went out with permission or he went out without permission. And we'll talk about a little bit later what that means, with permission or without permission, because usually it has nothing to do with permission. Masnissin, the Gemara said, Masnissin is the lawyer of Yehuda.
He didn't leave there to show me.
We're going to say perhaps that that's what it's talking about. It's referring to leaving Eretz Yisrael.
The reason.
And leaving Eretz Yisrael is generally prohibited. But if he left with for a permissible reason, or without its slavery, or maybe it's just a loosely used term to mean, Rishos, not to mean that he had permission, but he did things for things. Divrei Rishot. There are things that we say Divrei Mitzvah and Divrei Rishot. And so if he went out for things that were for Divrei Rishot, so this is like Rabbi Yehuda. So Mishnah is not like Rabbi Yehuda. The time Rabbi Yehuda, I know Rabbi Yehuda said, Abam Dinas Ayam Lo Yidam. Maybe she loyed, she yotta shalev Rishot. But he went out without permission. So again, so what does that mean? So the easy explanation is that we're talking about Eretz Yisrael, who left without a permissible reason for the Eretz
Yisrael. He came back.
He came back, so he left Eretz Yisrael without a good reason, and now he went abroad, and now he came back to Eretz Yisrael.
Without it.
He returned, obviously, with Rishon. He left without Eretz Yisrael without
Rishon. But I said the return was on Rishon.
The Gemara said it. The Mishnah said it. Mipnei she'yatza shelo Rishus.
So again, we said there are two ways to learn this. So we said some say that it's Eretz Yisrael. It's a very simple way of understanding it. Rashi doesn't understand it that way, and that's why we said there's a second way of understanding it. And that means that Rishus just means that the Chachamim gave him explicit reason to leave. Whereas Shalev Rishus means he wasn't required to take any sort of authority to leave. He left off his own accord. Shalev Rishus means usually it's the other way around. When we say that Rishus means that something that's not a mitzvah and it's not a kisser is Rishus, Divrei Rishus. So usually when you would say if he went of his own accord, it would be Rishus. Here we say Rishus would mean, according to Rashi, Rishus means the Tzibli Chachamim. And Shalev Rishus means that he went with, not that he went without permission, but without the necessity for permission.
I'm just saying that Rashi said even though he came back only with his own Rishus. The rabbi didn't allow him to come back. That's what
you're saying? No, Rashi says, the loyosa Rishus, Achaidim, since he didn't leave by permission of somebody else, El Barat and Asma, he went out by on of his own accord. Honestly, he's not considered a oinus. We say that he should have taken into accord under this circumstance that he may be delayed and he should take a haircut before he leaves. So if for example, suppose that the Chachamim had come to him and said, Go raise money for Pidyon Shvuot. So he left. So he didn't know he was going to be leaving, so he left without delay, and he just went and raised money, and now he's coming back, and so he had no opportunity to take the haircut. But somebody who was just going for business reasons or for vacation, we soon learned that maybe businesses, he was just going to tour. So you should take into account that you may be going to be delayed until coming late, and you should take a haircut before you leave, or while you're abroad, but not while you're traveling. But you also mentioned this later, so I'm a novel. So now, so if you look at this, disagrees with our Mishnah clearly, because our Mishnah didn't make any prohibition, just that somebody comes in the room with a young sticky hair. But you just said that if somebody comes who left Shalev Rishus, when he comes back, he's not allowed to take a haircut.
But we're talking about a person that left Eretz Yisrael once a Medina Seyam. What a person that's just living in Medina Seyam his whole life shows up in Eretz Yisrael.
It's a different question. There's a question of whether somebody who goes to Eretz Yisrael is allowed to leave Eretz Yisrael. And we're not going to get into it. And in fact, there were different times when, for different and to different people, that they gave different reasons for why he didn't go there. So each one on his level to understand. Right? What's the question? Never once said, I don't want to go there to Saul because I'm not certain that you're really allowed to leave. So
if he asks to Rod before he goes to Eretz Yisrael, I want to go to Eretz Yisrael now for the holidays.
We're not getting into it. Right now, that's what we're talking about.
Everybody's asking questions.
No, the point is what I'm just saying, because here was the question about Yotze Shleiber Rishon.
Right.
Now we're talking about somebody who's outside of Eretz Yisrael who wants to go to Eretz Yisrael. This is a complicated question.
Yeah,
generally, people today in Minik or Ivlam is that they go to Eretz Yisrael and they return because they're leaving for Parnassus.
That wasn't the question. Whether you take a haircut.
Whether you can take a haircut.
That's all we're talking about.
So the question about taking a haircut is maybe also labor issues. So we're saying that Rashi doesn't understand this whole Gemara is talking about Eretz Yisrael. We're not talking about Eretz Yisrael. We're talking about somebody who left the country where he was residing and went abroad. Somebody who went from Chutzlar to Eretz Yisrael would be the same rule as somebody went from Eretz Yisrael to Chutzlar. Now we're going to make a distinction about the reason why he left. So if the reason is because of touring, then everyone's going to agree that he is prohibited from taking a haircut, because if you just went for vacation, you just went to tour, then you should have been thinking about all either left being done before you left or while you were on vacation over there. But we're not going to relax the prohibition just for somebody who went on a vacation. So, Amar Rava, Moshe, Divrei HaKol, Aser. So if somebody went from Eretz Yisrael to Chutzlars, Chutzlars to Eretz Yisrael, he went from Babel to China, he went from the United States to Mexico, whatever it is, but he went touring. So Divrei HaKol, Aser. Then both Rav Yehuda and the time of our Mishnah would agree that it's prohibited. So when our Mishnah says that above and below, say, yeah, it doesn't mean an unqualified hefker. It means that we're talking about where he went for other reasons, not just simple rest and relaxation. So, but when it's raining, by contrast, if he went for business purposes, when the things they were called, mutter, then he is allowed to take care of it. So when are they arguing? If they're business, no one's arguing. They're saying if they're going touring, no one's arguing. So when are they arguing? We are not that the person is going for business that he needs money to live on, but somebody who's a wealthy person. He's a rather wealthy person. And now he just wants to go to China on business to expand operations. So when he's going to expand operations, he's already earning $500,000 a year, and now he just wants to earn $1 million a year, and he only His yearly expenses are only $250,000 a year, so he doesn't really need this money. So he's just going for profit reasons, for expansion. So in that case, should we say that it's more similar to the case of someone who's going touring, someone who's going vacationing, or is it more similar to someone who's going on business? Because after all, that's what he's doing. He's doing business. So, one makes it similar to a touring, and one says that it's like mezainis. The Tana of our Mishnah says it's like mezainis, it says it's mutter, and Rabbi Huda says it's like touring, and it is usher for that person to take a haircut or to launder his clothes.
Even if he went out and there was a big hefset. According to
we're not talking about the hefset.
Yeah, he has a million. He wants to earn another million, but by doing so,
it's fine. And we're not saying he shouldn't go. Nobody said he shouldn't go.
No.
What we're saying is he should take it. The question is not whether he can go or not go. The question is, can he take a haircut and wash his clothes during Chol HaMoed? And the answer is, since you were going for purposes of where you were just going to earn another million, you're not so far. A person who has to eke out a living, and he knows this is tomorrow, the rent is due. Tomorrow my mortgage is due. Tomorrow my tuition is due. If I don't cover the expenses, I'm dead in the water. They're coming to the customer close on my house. That type of person, when he's gone for business, he is at the end of the business, and he can't see past it. He has tunnel vision. You start telling him about taking care of cuts, you blow this world. A guy who's just going to make another million, it's true, he may have tunnel vision, and that's why he's a millionaire. But the point of it is, we don't have to relax prohibitions for you for that reason. You want to have tunnel vision, that's fine. We're not going to let you take a haircut of color light. We're not going to allow you for that reason to wash your clothes. You're free to do it, but we're not going to relax any prohibitions for you. The guy, he was busy and he had tunnel vision because otherwise he's going to lose his house, or otherwise they're going to throw his kids out of yeshiva. That guy, he has excusable reasons. He has a good reason for why he had tunnel vision and didn't take a haircut for you. The other guy that just wanted to make $1 million, you should have stopped for a moment. You should have washed his clothes. Come on, really? Because he wanted to make another million, you couldn't stop and take a haircut for Yomtov? Next way, from my Rebbe. We learned, Rebbe says, near the river Rebbe Huda, v'shiyatza shalei b'rishos. It would seem to me that the halacha should follow Rebbe Huda where the person went out for no great reason. V'divrei chachamim, v'shiyatza b'rishos. And it should follow that he should be permitted when he went out b'rishos. Now the Gemara asks, something doesn't make sense with what Rebbe said. Because what we just explained is that the only time that Rebbe and Rebbe Huda are arguing is in the case of where the person went out to make an extra million. But in the case where they went on vacation, everyone agrees that it's mutter. In the case where he went out for parnasa, everyone agrees that it's mutter. So now the Gemara wonders, my shalei b'rishus. Now when we say that shalei b'rishus, ilei maloshus, if in the case, in this argument of Rebbe and Rebbe Huda, that shalei b'rishus means that he went out for touring, va'amit the re'akal otzer, everybody said that it's mutter. So what kind of argument would be Rebbe and Rebbe Huda? The Elohim is saying this, and now you're going to say, no, that's talking about the Messiah. Fine, it's a real call Mutter, but we just said that everyone would agree that for another reason, it's Mutter. Ella, the rather Pshito Larvicha, that the reason is the thing that they're arguing over is for profit purposes. Now, Ema Seifa, so now let's look at the end. So what did we say? Nirin Divrei Chachamim. What did Rebbe say that here in Divrei Chacham that the halacha should follow like the Chacham b'shiyatza b'rishus, that when he went out the rishus, the my b'rishus, he lehim lemezaynes amet divrei kol moter the elu levacha ba'amet lehim divrei Yehuda. So b'ha halachi kamin divrei Yehuda the rabbanim b'shiyatza shleib b'rishus amayim l'moshe tachim l'chacham l'nechalakot elu levacha amaloshe meidulei. And now the Gemara says, like, just outside is much easier to explain. Very simply, what the saying is, Rebbe said, I agree with Rebbe. Rebbe said, I agree with the Chachamim when it's for Parnas, and I agree with Rebbe Huda when it's for or touring. So we just explained that when everybody agrees like touring that it's usher, and everybody agrees that the parnasa that it's mutter. And the only place that they're arguing is where it's for harvacha. Now how could you say in the one instance that it's that he agrees with Rebbe and in the other instance he agrees with the Chachamim, when the only thing that they're arguing about is there are three possibilities. There's the possibility of parnasa, there's the possibility of touring, and there's the possibility of profit, pure profit, making. Now, in the case of touring, in the case of parnasa, no one's arguing. The only place that they're arguing is in one case. How could Rebbe possibly say that I hold like Rebbe and I hold like the Chachamim? He can't. I have a Rebbe say, I'll take Chana, like Rebbe Huda. There's only one case in which they're arguing. You can't hold like both. So our explanation was that they're not, we explained the Mishnah and Rebbe Huda saying that they're only arguing in this one unique case. So how could that really be if Rebbe said that the halakha follows like one in one case and follows like the other in the other case, when there's only one case that they're arguing about?
So by this, we imply that they have to be arguing about all the three
things. That they have to be at least arguing about two
things.
So now the Gemara answers is very simply that no. Our original understanding was correct. And what's happening here is that Rebbe is saying not that the halacha is like Rebbe Yehuda in one case, and the halacha is like the Chachamim in the other case, and that in those cases they're arguing. What he's saying is exactly what we just said earlier, that in the case of Turin, the Chachamim would be moida to Rebbe Yehuda. So nearer than Rebbe Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda seems correct in that case, and in fact, the Chachamim agree in that case. So, near the degree, it's not Rabbi Yehuda is not saying that I say that there's a machlokes between the Chachamim and Rabbi Yehuda, and I'm saying that Halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda in this case. He's saying that near and dear Rabbi Yehuda is that everyone says near and dear Rabbi Yehuda. Everyone agrees that in this case, Rabbi Yehuda would be correct. Even the Chachamim would say that there's no argument in that case. Conversely, in the case of Parnassa, near and dear Chachamim, the Chachamim seem correct, and so correct as they seem that even Rabbi Yehuda would agree. Where do they argue? They argue only in the case of the middle case where it's for pure profit.
What's the Chiddush?
What did he have to come? He's not Rebbe Yehuda, was a
Tana. No,
Rebbe was a Tana. So Ayo Gemara is just simply repeating exactly what it was that Rebbe had said many generations earlier. That's it.
Like that.
Amar Shmuel. Now we're 5-6 lines from the bottom. Amar Shmuel. Shmuel said, "Katan Elu Zemayim Bukul Galich Zemayim." A child that's born on Chol HaMoed is permitted to have his haircut, but the parents are permitted to give the child a haircut on Chol HaMoed. Now we're talking about a child that was born with a lot of hair, and the hair is like bothering the child. It's getting into his mouth, it's getting into his eyes, or whatever. It's not a sakana, because a sakana certainly would be permitted. You wouldn't have to even say this. We're just talking about where it's irksome to the child. The child can give it a haircut. So Shmuel, I'm a Shmuel called, and I'm a little bit of a little bit of a little bit of
a little bit of I mean, long hair within his first 7 days. How can you say like that?
There are children that are born with long hair and kind of falls out usually afterwards. They're somewhat hairy. This was abnormally hairy, so it was bothering the child, whatever. Maybe it wasn't getting to his eyes, but it was bothering the child. So you can trim the hair on Chol HaMoed because there's no greater prison than the prison of being in the womb. So what can we conclude from this? Implicitly from this, what we conclude is that when you're allowed to give the child a haircut is if he was born on Chol HaMoed because he was in prison prior to Chol HaMoed. But what happens if he was born before Yom Tov? Then you're not allowed to give it. The Moed in the Karoloid. The Mazar of Pinchas, or Pinchas, that's the question. How can you say that a child, you can't give him a haircut if he was born before Yom Tov, then Chol HaMoed, you can't give him a haircut? Because we learned this follow. We learned the rule, call Elu Shamar Mutal Legaleya, that all those who are permitted to take a haircut on Chol HaMoed, Mutal Legaleya, then they have that same. For the same people who are permitted to take a haircut on Chol HaMoed, those same people would be permitted to take a haircut if they an avel something they
so
they
lost somebody comes immediately after the shiva.
No. We're not talking about Chol HaMoed. Just anything. Somebody got out of jail and he was in avel. So he couldn't take a haircut before the parent died.
Right.
So he could take a haircut and doesn't have to wait. And so normally an avel is not allowed to take a haircut. He'll have to wash his clothes. Well, although in that instance would be allowed this. So we say the same rules that apply to Moyet apply to a oven. So now implicit from that rule would be Now, not explicit, but implicit from an inference that we can draw from that rule is that the converse would be true, that if you prohibited from taking a haircut on Chol HaMoed, you'd be prohibited from taking a haircut during Kiryat Eiza. The Yamir Kassim is a Pusim in If you're going to say that a Kassim is allowed to take a haircut, only if he was born on Chol HaMoed, so now you're going to find a difference between an Avel by a Kassim and Chol HaMoed by a Kassim. This is not able to say, hey, if we come to Matanya, so then what rule would we draw from here is that if a Kassim, we said the same rules that apply to by Chol HaMoed. We say that a child, so what rule did we want to draw that a child who was born on Chol HaMoed is allowed to take a haircut? A child who was born prior to Yom Tov, you can't give him a haircut on Chol HaMoed. But we're going to see by Avelis that that's not true. Avelis Mayagi Begotten, Batanya, Mikhail Mikhail Mayagos Nefesh. That a Kassim, we say the rule is that a Kassim has no Avelis whatsoever. The only thing that you do for a Kassim by Avelis, so let's say Rechon HaSan, the child's father died. So they go and they hear Kriya for their child. Not because the child has to do Avelis. The child has no Avelis. The child has no nothing. He doesn't have to sit on the floor, doesn't have to tear his clothes. He's allowed to eat whatever he wants. He has no Avelis whatsoever. The only reason why they tear his clothes is so that people who see that this child is walking with a torn shirt, they're going to cry their hearts out. They're going to feel bad. And because they're going to feel bad, they're going to say, woe for the loss of this person, lucky left over a little child like that. And so I must manage to make others feel bad and to take pity on the child. So we tear his clothes. But it's not because of his avelis. In other words, what do we see from here? That the child who is in avelis is allowed to take a haircut. The only thing that that would do for him is tear his clothes, but not because of avelis. He has no avelis. So what does he say that avelis has the same rules as moyed when she doesn't have the same rules? You chose to draw the inference when all that we said a rule was that whoever's permitted to take a haircut on Chol HaMoed is allowed to take a haircut on during his avelis. We didn't say that the converse was true. You drew that inference. But that inference was wrong, and therefore there are instances where it is prohibited for someone to take a haircut on Chol HaMoed, such as the child, and the avel would be allowed to, such as the child. That's it. So you drew the wrong inference. No question. You just came to the wrong conclusion. Now, we're going to learn this whole Gemara in the opposite, that Rav Shmuel said the opposite. And we're going to learn this whole Gemara in the opposite manner. The Tamer of Shesha, Amemer, the Tamer of Shesha Bereda of Idi Masnehasi. Amemer, another state of Shesha, said in the son of Rav Idi, they learned as follows. Amar Shmuel, Kapalukha Legalke Memoya, the child is allowed to take a haircut on Talamud. Leishna Leilu, Leishna. Regardless of whether he was born on Chol HaMoed or whether he was born before Yom Tov, he's allowed to take a haircut. Now, before we said that, Shmuel said that if he was born on Chol HaMoed, he's allowed to take a haircut, and we said the inference was that before Yom Tov, he's not allowed to take a haircut. Others said that Shmuel didn't say that, but Shmuel actually said that a child can take a haircut regardless of whether he was born before Yom Tov or during Yom Tov. It makes no difference. In that case, the Omer of Pinchas, Afanamamistanina. Now, before we said this brisa as a question, now we're going to learn this brisa as a proof that we're going to ultimately reject. The Omer of Pinchas, Afanamamistanina, called Elisham and Mutul Galechna Moyed, Moyed, Mutul Galechna Meyadla. Paul, Tun Galechna Moyed, Tun Galechna Meyadla. We say that you learn in the verse that anyone who is allowed to take a haircut on Chol HaMoed is allowed to take a haircut on during Gabelot. And so we want to draw an inference from that whoever is prohibited from taking a haircut on Chol HaMoed is prohibited from taking a haircut during Avelis. And so, so we see that the Kotlan, we said that the Kotlan doesn't have Hatehilus, and the only reason why you tear his clothes is because of Hagma. And so, it's exactly the same, because Shmuel said that a Kotlan can always take a haircut during the Chol Hamoed, regardless of when he was born, and the same thing with Hatehilus, is he can take a haircut regardless of how he became the other. So we have a proof. So now we're going to reject the proof for the same reason that we rejected the question before. Amar Avajim, Mishpani Ha. So then, you drew the inference that in both cases, that where it's Aser, it would be, where it's Aser in Avel, in Moyes, that it's Aser in Avel, that doesn't say. And you drew that inference. Clearly, Yeshman Aser, Yeshman Mutter, maybe when it comes to Iser, there, that rule doesn't apply. That that parallel doesn't hold true.
It's fair.
Yes, man, mother, I believe in the egg of Elizabeth Eggles. Remember, although in the egg of Elizabeth Eggles, although now we think, although doesn't have a villus on Yom Shnemar or Solomar, Shnemar is the first of the Machta Chagecha. You should be the Simcha on the Chag. So now, E avilus the Nikarahu. So now, what happens if the person became an Ovel before Yom Shnemar? So he was already being Noeg Avelus. So you have already the essa of Avela, and it's really not a true essa because it was before Yom Tov. When it comes to Yom Tov, it's not an oinen, it's really only the Darabanan anyway. The essa, the mitzvah of Darabanan, he Avela from the Karabu, also essa the Rabban, was also essa the Yachid. But the mitzvah of Samachta B'chagecha is applied to the Rabban, and the mitzvah of Avela is applied to only to the Yachid at that moment, and so the mitzvah of the rabbin of use the simcha
prevails
and pushes away the avelus of the yachid. The e avelus the hashtahu. Now certainly if it's a avel, if it became a avel on Yom Tov or on Chol Hamoed, then it certainly would hold true. The hashtahu loy also answer the yachid with also answer the rabbin. That certainly the es of the yachid can't come and push away the es of the rabbin. If we say that even if the person already had the essa, he was already being knowing the essa of the yachid, he was already sinning on Avelus, comes Yom Tov, we say, we don't care if you're already sinning on Avelus. Now it's a part of Simcha, take away the Avelus. Then if it's a part of Simcha when it first came to Avelus, then for sure you should push away the Avelus.
The essa, the yachid on the yachid, is pushed away by the essa on the yachid.
Yes. So now that we're at Menudah Mahu, if someone was an excommunication, what should be the rule on Yom Tov? Now, a person is excommunicated, people aren't as glad to talk to him, they have business dealings with him. So now it's Angus Nefesh, and there's a mitzvah of the Machta B'chagecha. So Menudah Mahu, what's the rule by a Menudah? Shein Ignidu Ben Egel, should he have to the minig of nidui on regal, or is it relaxed and during Yom Tov he can do whatever he wants? Amar Rabbi Yosef, Tashma, we learned done in the Pashas, in the Makis, in the Mamil. We will say Dina Mishamsin Lei on Chol Hamoed. We sit and we judge capital cases where there's going to be corporal punishment, cases of civil disputes. The Eloi Tayyip Medina, and if someone doesn't listen to the verdict, Misham Sule, we put him in excommunication. He's not the Beitach in the Negimidri, but Egel. So, Mishum Mitzvah, and he cut out the Egel, Bachile, Yash, Misham Sule, or not. Should we say, if the rule is that we're going to relax the prohibition of someone who's already in excommunication, we say when it comes to Yom Tov, Samachtav Chagech, and that overrides the excommunication, and he's permitted to do anything on Yom Tov and on Chol Hamoed. And how can we say that on Chol Hamoed we can put somebody in excommunication? If someone was already in excommunication, you take him out, then certainly we shouldn't put him in excommunication on Yom Tov. We're not talking about a case of actually putting the person into excommunication. We're talking about starting to determine whether or not to put him in the text, starting to determine whether or not we should give him capital punishment, starting to listen to the case, but not to come to the verdict. And when we come to the verdict, first after Yom Kippur, then when we go to the dinner, the Eloi came up, because if you're going to say that that's not so, that we're not talking about, if you're going to insist that it's talking about actually coming to a full verdict, so dealing the Foshes, the Ktami, the Katlina, if when it comes to a capital case, do we actually put somebody to death on Chalamoy? The best thing, now we don't care about the guy who killed, he's a murderer. You know, we don't have too much Rahmanis on him. But the best thing on the day that they announce a verdict, the day that they announce the verdict, they have to carry out the verdict. And they have to fast. So you might want to fast on Yom Kippur, you might want to fast on Chol HaMoed. So if they're going to announce the verdict, they would have to fast. So obviously it must be that when we say that you can prove a shift, the best thing is,
because they issued a...
There is a specific that we learned that says, let's say, you're not allowed to eat when you're causing blood. When you're causing bloodshed, you're putting someone to death, and when you're issuing the death sentence, you have to fast that day. It's a positive. We learned about it. So anyway, so they would have to fast, and since they're fasting, then I'm going to up this. So clearly, when we say that they can engage in capital cases, doesn't mean they reach the verdict, they need just to hear the case. So come in with the chesiyamta. The Tanya Rabbi Kiva, remember, name was Sanhedrin, how do we know that the Sanhedrin that killed somebody, that they're not allowed to eat anything that day from when they announced the verdict? I'm a blamer. But in the public, they say, you know, they eat all of her blood. So if you want to conclude, look at Gemara, so one second, so you want to conclude that they're allowed to consider the case on Chol HaMoed, but not reach a verdict. So it's going to come a case where they're going to reach a verdict, and then I can announce the verdict. What happens if it's a clear case? If they sit down to a capital case, it's rather cut and dry, and they realize that they have to.
On Chol HaMoed.
On Chol HaMoed.
Are they supposed to give the penalty the same day, not the next day?
Right. So the whole question was, so maybe we will delay the verdict. Yeah. So now that we're saying, but one second, you're not allowed to delay a verdict. Not only you're not allowed to delay the punishment, you're not allowed to delay the verdict either.
Okay.
So what happens if it turns out that what they said, okay, we're sitting down in the middle, probably take 3 weeks to reach a verdict.
Yeah.
What happens if it doesn't take 3 weeks? It takes 2 days. And they realize that there's no defense. It's a cut and dry case. So then you're going to delay the verdict. You're going to delay the verdict, and then you know how to do.
Right. So
from here, so what must be? So the conclusion that we must draw is at this point is that in fact when we say that they can sit. And in judgment is that, in fact, they put the person to death on Chol HaMoed. And so the same thing is, you would put the person into Nidui on Chol HaMoed. So now we can resolve our question of, does the limit of Nidui apply on Yom Kippur and on Chol HaMoed? And the answer would be yes, because we see that you actually have to put somebody into Nidui on Chol HaMoed. We see that you apply the death sentence. So we see that, and in fact, but the same thing we said was that they sit and they sit on capital cases, corporal cases, and decide whether it's the first time one in Nidui. So in the capital case, you're reaching a verdict, so presumably also reaching the verdict in Nidui. So we can resolve the question. We still have a question of how to confess on the other side. So now we're going to say, no, one second. No, in the case of the, but now if you're going to ask the question, so how could they reach a verdict on Chol HaMoed, they're going to have to fast and then all that. Not a simple answer to you, says the Gemara. They will start sinning in the morning. What's the whistle? Start sinning in the morning, and right. They'll realize that they come towards the verdict. Right. They'll sit down and eat. Then they'll come back and they'll say the verdict. So also the tafel, and I have the din, and I have also the shasta kuliyema. They'll sit and they'll eat the whole day. Also the shi on that same day. They don't announce the verdict that moment. They have to do it that same day. So they'll come right before shi. They'll announce the verdict, and then 5 minutes, they reach the verdict. That's when they have to stop eating. So they'll stop eating for 5 minutes, but that's not considered fasting. Because they ate all day. So the other of the Shkia, it's like, I'm never going to do it. The neighbor comes from and they'll kill him that same day, in the next few minutes. It was an abridged appellate process there. But we're talking about the appeal. Presumably, we're talking about sitting on the appeal, not in the original brief. Amar Abaye said, Toshma. You know, they've gone through all of the layers of whatever they're going to consider. Amar Abaye. Abaye said, Toshma, come in here. Ulinuda Shetira Le Chachamim, a minuda that they were matir, that Chachamim were matir him, Amar Rava. So Shetira Le Chachamim. Abaye said that if you look in the Mishnah, what does it say? It says, a minuda Shetira Le Chachamim, that a minuda the Chachamim were matir. He was reading the Mishnah a little bit different from the way we read it, because we read it originally according to the Maskana of the Gemara. But Abaye wants to say, Uminuda, that when we're studying the Mishnah, Uminuda, the Sheitir like Chachamim, we read it as one phrase. Uminuda, the Chachamim or Master in, he is reading it Uminuda, and with the case of Uminuda, Sheitir like Chachamim, the Chachamim or Master, Uminuda, so this person, Erev Yom Tov, anyone who's in Nidui, Erev Yom Tov can't take a haircut. Chom Chalamai, everyone who's in Nidui can take a haircut. So he's a Minuta. She did it on the Chachamim. We're not there on the Chachamim. So the Gemara says, no, you're reading it. Then the grammar was wrong. Amar Rabba, Nikatami, Shehiti, Ruhu Chachamim. Does it say that the Chachamim were matir everyone? Shehiti, Ruhu Chachamim. That the Chachamim were matir him specifically. In other words, we're talking about a case where what happened was that this guy was in Nidui, and they said, listen, you got to pay him. And he has money, and he doesn't pay him, which he was opposed to the deal. So they put him in Nidui. Then he goes, Chachamim, he says, listen, I can't. Or he doesn't pay it off, the person who he was supposed to pay. And then comes to the test. He says, I pay it off. So they say, okay, we're lifting the excommunication. So, Shehitir, we're talking about that type of case. Not that Shehitir, that then Mahir generally, on Salamoy, everyone on.
What if they said Shehitir?
So, in fact, if they had said Shehitir, so then Abai would be correct. Right, that doesn't say that. So, Abai is right. So therefore, Abaye is not correct. That's what the Gemara says. Amar Rav, he can't shechir a chacham, shechir a loy chacham a chacham. So as we're talking about a case where he went and he was mafayis and followed him. So also kind of did up on him. He came back to the press of Shorli, and they said he is the excommunication has been lifted, and now everybody's committed to do this. This next piece about Matzari goes into the next page, so we'll stop.
Why don't we make a new name here?
Where are you going, Canada?